Well, here we are with conversation around the dinner table. This is Thomas Rob.
Jason Rob.
And it's just the two of us holding the fort here today.
Right. Rachel is not available.
She's not available. Eugene was here last week. He is out of town this weekend visiting some friends. And Andrew is out of town also.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, summertime, that happens a lot. You know, people are starting to go see family and friends, or they may be do more family activities. Because, you know, summertime, that's when people are going on vacations and stuff like that.
Right.
So that happens.
Yeah, you know? Well, Andrew went up to a conference, identity. I say a conference. Maybe that's not the right word for it. But he's going up to meet. He's got some friends up there, Shell City, Missouri. With Pastor Gaiman's group. And so he's gone up there for the weekend, for a church activity with them. And I think Shelby went up there also. So they'll be back. They'll be back Sunday.
Yeah, well, that's good.
This afternoon.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, anyway, they're having a good time.
Well, that's great.
But we've been having some pretty nice, been cool the last few days here.
It has been. It's, really just in the mid 50s.
Yeah.
And been kind of rainy and stuff like that. And, but yeah, mid 50s. And I think it's supposed to be like that all weekend long, or it has been all weekend long, I should say. And then I guess next week is supposed to hopefully start getting warm again. But in the wintertime, 50s, we'd be like jumping up and down and happy. And
oh, yeah.
If it was in the 50s, but summertime is, we always like to complain because it's cool.
Yeah. Now, we're not going to complain in August when it cools down.
No.
To 80.
No.
You know, 70.
Right.
No,
we'll,
you know.
We'll be happy about that.
Cool down in August is nice. Cool down in spring is not so nice. Cool down in the wintertime is horrible.
Right.
So, anyway, we are having, it's been 2 weeks since our conference has ended already.
Yep. Time goes by fast. Yeah. It really
does. It's only been over for 2 weeks.
2 weeks. I was thinking about that a couple days ago. I was driving home, and I was, I think it was like Wednesday or Thursday. I was driving home from work, and I was just thinking about things, and I was thinking, wow, it's been a week and a half since our conference, and time clicks by really, really quick, and it really seems like. I had one person tell me one time, it's kind of like, roll of toilet paper. The closer you get to the end of it, the quicker that toilet paper is rolling. And it really is. I mean, just life seems like it's spinning fast. I mean, there's just so many things that goes on anymore. I don't care if it's because you got conferences, there's meetings, there's activities. I mean, we're just constantly doing things. And that plus just things that are happening around the world, you know, that's involving our race and our culture. So many attacks going on that we're constantly thinking about those things. And just the idea of just peace and just not doing anything is out the door. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah. You know? Well, you know, I think in the old days where, you know, they'll spend so much time just doing activities that we don't have patience for today. And I know Rachel did read a study here back a few years ago, how people say time is shorter. And this article she read was making the claim that it's not just a feeling, it really is shorter.
Right.
I forget how it was, but just your brain is moving so fast anymore that you're really shortening time.
Right.
And because in the old days, you know, you sit on the front porch and you whittle a knife and you make a chair. And now if you can't have what you want immediately, you get frustrated. You got to be doing something all the time. And it's
a technological age.
I guess
it really is.
Yeah, it's not necessarily a good thing, but it's the age we live in. Because I know that when I put up my first publication back in 1966, I hand set the type. It was called a Message of Old, and I had a big drawer of type, and I hand set each letter into a tray and then put that into the printing press and print it. Now, or you people do bookkeeping or they'll tabulate information, and it took a few moments or a few minutes to do it. Now we've got to the point where we are instant information. And you know, when you type in something to the computer, then you go that little clicking thing with your fingers, waiting for about 3 seconds for it to appear. And you're like frustrated. Why does it take so long?
Yeah.
You know, what, you got to wait 3 seconds for your information? Why does it take so long?
Yeah.
We want it there immediately. And
then literally hundreds and thousands of people are reading it.
Yeah.
I mean, worldwide.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an amazing concept.
Yeah. Speaking about people seeing things worldwide, that I don't know how many people here have seen it yet. They can see it, of course. Is the that CNN story called "United Shades of America," and it was appeared on the TV a few weeks ago, but it's on YouTube now. You can watch it, "United Shades of America."
Well, I've had one. Attorney in town, won't say his name, but a very prominent attorney in town who I was talking to a few days ago, and he brought that up, and he said he was really impressed with the story regarding us.
Uh-huh.
And he said your dad did a really great job. He said I was really actually impressed with the story itself.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, he didn't really bring up about a couple of the other
goofy people,
clan groups, you know. And I was telling him, I said, that story actually was done about 2 years ago. And I said that looked like they weren't going to show it and air it because the story was just too favorable. And I said, and all of a sudden, they said they're going to air it. And my belief is the couple of the so-called groups that they put along with ours was an afterthought because it was so good they had to get some group or some individuals to make it look like, oh yeah, this is what the Klan really is, and just kind of like rednecks, you know,
yeah.
your stereotype Hollywood image. And so I was telling this attorney that basically the people in the group, we had no idea who they are. I mean, just who knows? And so from that standpoint, that was something that they were trying to show a difference between our group and others. But he just had commented and said, he didn't really talk about these other groups. It was like, okay, those are just nobody's
significant.
Yeah, and he was just saying he was really impressed with the show about our group. He thought we did a really good job, and I've had several other people around town who've said the same thing.
So we got interrupted, but we'll try to pick it up from where we left off. The
the CNN interview, it was really good. What a lot of people don't understand.
Well, it's called United Shades of America.
United Shades, great. It's a new, I guess, a new program.
Yeah, and it has a comedy
twist
to
yeah.
it, you know. And so there's some comedy humor in the show, but
for the most part, they haven't been able to really say anything funny about when they did this section dealing with the Knights.
The only thing they could say is I should learn some TV techniques and Ryan Sequest. I'm not sure what that even would mean.
Right.
I've been trying to think.
I don't really know.
What kind of TV?
He's a host.
Yeah, what kind of techniques
yeah.
does Ryan Maybe I should watch it.
Right. Yeah, maybe, yeah.
So he made that little comedic response, and then he made a comment about our have to look at the camera or something, and I don't know. I don't know if that was all about. He just had to say something.
He had to say something to yeah. try to make it look funny.
Yeah. That's okay. That's his job.
Yeah,
I'm not going to fault him for that.
Right.
I'm not going to fault him. You're a comedian. You're supposed to be funny.
Right.
So I'm not going to fault him for trying to employ a little bit of humor there. So that was good. But he had more to work on with other people.
Oh, my gosh. That was hilarious.
And I like the part where he says, How come these Klan people all live down scary country roads?
Yeah, that was pretty that was funny. Pretty,
and what's even funnier is that Pearson, he's all by himself.
Right.
But that TV crew, there were about 20 of them.
Yeah.
There were so many of them, they brought their own, they had their lunch catered.
Yeah. And their own chef with them.
So funny. But I thought their show was pretty good.
Yeah, right? it was pretty good. Well, and then what? Couple weeks ago, or maybe a week ago, you guys have done a interview with Associated Press.
Associated Press,
yeah. Which it's like anything else. Every week there's reporters doing interviews and stuff like that. But that's on the last one I can think of, is about a week ago of a national prominence.
Well, and then there's another
Associated Press.
There's another one we're just been in contact with. I don't know any details on it yet. Not even sure the production company. I'm not even sure if it's how big it really is going to be. But this is a producer. I give a name, but not necessary. A producer. And what people don't understand is these producers work for a production company. And the production company makes a show, and then they sell it to CNN. Or right. They sell it to Discovery Channel. Or they sell it to these other people. It isn't CNN or Discovery Channel or National Geographic. It isn't themselves necessarily who puts the show together. Is they buy shows from production companies. So this is a production company, and they contacted me. We've had two email communications so far. And he said they're working on a show to be released sometime. I got the impression, I'm not sure exactly, but I got the impression sometime late summer. And he said it'll be a major show, national broadcasting. So we'll see again. And of course, our whole objective is to portray ourselves in a professional manner and to properly represent the white nationalist cause. And we'll turn down shows if we think, and we have.
Oh yeah, all the time.
We'll turn down shows if it looks like it's going to be strictly focusing on ridicule. But if it's a serious show, and we feel there's mileage to be gained from it, then we want to project ourselves in a professional, serious manner that people, not only members of the Knights, but people in the white nationalist movement, can be proud of.
When you have a professional organization and professional spokespersons, then you're not portraying, you know, some idiot person out there. You're not doing the typical Hollywood stereotype, you know, Klansman that everyone thinks of when they, you know, watch TV. And so when you come across professionalism, they can't really make a joke about that. I mean, they can try to make comments, you know, and stuff like that, and try to put old footage of movies, you know, of Klansmen and stuff like that. But when they focus on the Knights, they can't really make that much fun of it because they're looking at someone that's talking intelligently. And they know that.
Well, yes, they do know that. And I think that's why we continually get good stories. And then they know we're represented by an attorney, so that probably keeps them at bay a little bit also. But we're happy with the stories we get most of the time. The Barnes Review, which is a very reputable magazine, slip-covered magazine out of Washington, D.C., had a nice story about us just in the recent issue of the Barnes Review. And
That was regarding kind of the history of the Klan, the reason the Klan was founded because of the Northern Aggression. And a lot of people are not aware that when after the Civil War and with the Northern troops still occupying the South, whites could not vote. Whites were basically prisoners in their own homeland. And so whites couldn't vote. They could not hold any elected office. That's why right after the Civil War, you see all these black legislators and senators and people think, oh, white people wanted to vote for blacks. No, because the whites couldn't vote. So that's why there was black legislators and black senators and all like that. And literally, the whites were being occupied. They could not do anything whatsoever. And so the Klan was founded to repel the Northern troops. Once that was done, the South, then the Klan was disbanded.
I get a kick out of conservative Republicans trying to show the Republican Party has always been the friends of the black man. And they show back how all the Republican black leaders of the South after the Civil War and so on said, we've always been the friends of the black man. The Democrats have always been the enemy of the black man. Then they point out some of the Dixiecrats and the Southern Democrats and so forth. They see, that proves it. Well, then we've switched sides. What amounts to the Republican Party back then was very pro miscegenation. They're pro destruction of the white power structure, and the Democratic Party of the South. I don't know about the North. I don't know about that, but definitely the South was very strong in favor of preserving a Christian Western heritage, and they worked in efforts to do that. It switched that way today. The Democratic Party today is doing the very same thing that the Republican Party did several generations ago. And the Republican Party has taken on the mantle of the conservative party maintaining Western Christian culture, even though I'm not saying that. Well, maybe I misstated that, because we understand the betrayal of the Republican Party. But I guess what I'm trying to say is it has more of that image.
That's the ideal. That's the ideal of what the reputation is.
Right. It has more of that image than the Democratic Party, even though we know that the Republican Party has betrayed us time and time and time and time again. And that's, of course, part of the reason for the rise of Donald Trump, because people feel very angry with the betrayal of the Republican Party against their traditional values.
Right. Well, and kind of talking about the Barnes Review, yeah, they had an article about the Klan, the history of the Klan, the reason it was formed, and then it talked about the kind of the modern Klan and really focused on the Knights Party and the fact that the family retreat and the Epic Center that we are building here in the Ozarks and all our outreach programs. And basically how the Knights really does represent the Klan. I mean, when people think of the Klan, they think of the Knights. And because of the fact that we are a very well professional organization, we have professional leadership, we've been tested time and time, and we have a good, solid structure. And that's what the Barnes Review basically was saying. And so, but the Knights really, even though it was focused on the Klan, the Knights really does not only represent the Klan anymore, it represents the white resistance. I mean, the Knights really have become the voice of the white resistance, and we always say that, but it really is coming to that point where people are flocking to us, the media is flocking to us, shows are always being done on the Knights. Everyone is really looking at the Knights as a voice of the white resistance, because you can have people getting on the internet and say, we're some type of white political party or we're a white organization, and that's it. That's where it stops. You know, they say that, but then where can you drive to the location? Where can you see the building? Where can you see the office staff?
The launching pad.
Yeah, launching pad. Where can you see those things? And there is none. But the Knights, you can go to a physical structure. You can see this family retreat that has been built and is continually being built. You can see the Knights Party office building where we have a staff and mails coming in every day and phone calls. We have office hours. You can see the Christian Revival Center. You can see the cabins where people come to the conferences where they're able to stay at. You can see the new structure of the Christian Revival Research and Development Center that is unprecedented from the standpoint that nothing like that has ever been done in the white resistance. And the Knights is doing that. We're having a museum. We're having classrooms. We're having a library. We're having a Hall of Heroes. There is literally no other white Christian organization out there, or even the white resistance as a whole, that has anything similar to what the Knights have. And so when people look at the Knights, they really are looking at the voice of the white resistance. And so this article, the Barnes Review, you know, where it has about the Knights Party on the Klan, to me, it's even more than that. Because the Klan, for very inception of the founding back in the 1800s, the Klan basically is the voice of the white resistance. That's why it was formed. When people think of what organization out there is going to stand up for white rights, white Christianity, they think of the Klan. They don't think of any other organization. And there are a lot of good organizations out there, good white political organizations that are saying the same thing or trying to spread the alarm and message of the people. And there are good, there are good people.
But the media has used the Klan as the image, say, this is the enemy of diversity.
Right.
This is the enemy of multiculturalism. Be afraid of them. But the white people, they're afraid of multiculturalism. They're afraid of diversity. And so when they look at this destruction of our culture and heritage and our values and everything that we love and hold dear, when they look at that, and they want to look at the enemy of that, the media says it's the Klan.
Right.
And they don't have to wonder and try to figure it out. They just automatically know by a Pavlovian reaction, KKK.
Right. And so you get the masses of the people out there who looks at the Klan, and you got the media saying, yeah, the Klan's against diversity, the Klan's against homosexual marriages, the Klan is against multiculturalism, the Klan is against international monetary systems, the Klan is against these Syrian refugees coming in, the Klan is for the traditional family, the Klan is for building a wall. The Klan is for stopping immigration. When they're saying all this stuff, then people are thinking, well, then I want to be with the Klan.
Yeah.
If that's what the Klan is for, I want to be that. And then when they see programs regarding the Knights and how we are a family organization, we're a Christian organization, then they start thinking, well, that's a legitimate organization. That is something that I can identify myself with. And that's why we see the rise, the popularity of Donald Trump, because Donald Trump, even though we all know he's not the savior, he's not the one that reality is going to save America, it has sparked a sense of nationalism, because there are the core of America is your white Christians, and they know what is happening. They see the destruction of the country. They see all this multiculturalism and their moral values being spit on and being destroyed. And Donald Trump represents the person in the presidential election anyway that is going to help maintain that sense of white Christian America. You know, everything we think of white Christian America. And so they see that.
And now, whether he does or not isn't the issue.
Right.
The issue, because some people confuse that. I've seen some people within the white nationalist movement and in some of your Christian identity circles who say, well, you think Donald Trump's a savior, and he's not the savior, only if we repent to God. You know, and I agree we need repentance, but they don't say what we need to repent of.
Right.
You know, what is it we have to repent of? Of course, we say, love your God and love your people. And that's what we need to repent of. So we see Donald Trump, as you said a moment ago, he has opened the door, the narrative to nationalism. And that's the doorway we walk through.
And there has been many, countless articles. I was reading one a couple weeks ago. It was a national syndicated columnist. And they were talking about that's why Trump has become so popular, because he has sparked nationalism.
Yeah.
And no other so-called Republican president has been able to do that. Well, because the reason has sparked nationalism is because he's saying everything that the majority of the white people want. And that's why it sparked nationalism. And so when he says that,
I think
that
the nationalism is always there.
It's always been there.
They have a spokesman for it.
No, absolutely. It's always been there.
And there's been a spokesman like us, but we didn't have the money to force away. Donald Trump has the money. They can't ignore him.
Right.
And
because in reality, if he was like Ted Cruz or any of these other ones, they can be bought and paid for. you know, and they would follow the party line of the Republican Party, and Donald Trump is saying, I don't need the party bosses, don't really need your money, the people are behind me, and I have my own money, so I'm going to do what I think is right. And so, but the thing is, he is saying things that, yes, that the white resistance have said for years and years and decades and decades. And has come to the point where what he's talking about is the same thing the white resistance have said, and it legitimizes the talking point of the white resistance. And so when they see Donald Trump talking about all these things, they legitimize that because he's running for president. And when they see the Knights talking about that, and the white resistance in general talking about the same thing Donald Trump is saying, it legitimizes the white resistance. And that's what our enemy fears. They don't want the average mom and dad out there legitimizes the ideas and the concepts of the white resistance, the beliefs of the white resistance. They don't want that to happen. They want that disconnection. And they are afraid of that. They are very fearful of that.
Right.
And so because they're putting basically the full throttle down, you know, on everything regarding our morals and everything traditional America. I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago, President Obama sent a directive that all public schools had to have transgender neutral bathrooms, and that even if you try to make it just a bathroom separate from transgender, that's in violation of the Civil Rights Code.
You just want one bathroom.
Just one bathroom for men and for girls and boys.
Yeah.
You know, and governors are outraged about it. Asa Hutchinson, there's a lot of things I don't like about him. But him, along with the Attorney General of Arkansas, said we are not following that. We are telling all schools not to do that. And so you have governors, even though they in some way have betrayed, you know, what we would think of traditional America, they themselves just can't tolerate some of the stuff they're doing. Well, and so they're starting to basically balk.
Yeah.
At the idea of the federal government shoving their agenda down on the
states. And this is a divide that we've been seeing for a number of years now that's going to occur between states and the federal government. It's going to grow worse. It's a good thing.
Right.
The intensity of it is going to grow more and more and more as the state governments become revolted with the actions of the federal government. So this is a good thing, and I hope it increases.
Yeah. But yeah,
it's amazing. It's amazing that Obama was not amazing to him. Now, of course,
he told you he was going to change America. Yeah, that was his agenda. I want to
fundamentally change America.
Fundamentally change America. So it's not like he doesn't know what he's doing. He's like, oh, I didn't realize this. No, he had a plan from the very beginning.
Yeah. And it makes you wonder what else he's going to do over the next 6-7 months.
Right.
He's got nothing to lose anymore.
Right.
No more elections in his future.
No.
So he's going full throttle ahead to destroy every aspect and image we have of white Christian America.
Right. Well, I mean, and you know, even with the fact that, you know, he's saying he's going to try to bring, I think, around like 60,000 refugees, so-called refugees, and they're not refugees.
They're invaders.
But basically Syrian refugees are non-whites, bringing them in the United States. And that's just the legitimate ones on the refugee program. They don't talk about all the legal immigrants that are coming in on H-1B visas, your work visas, and then, of course, you got all your illegals coming in. So it's just like full throttle. They are just trying to pour as many non-whites into the United States to fundamentally change the population. That's the goal.
Yeah.
I mean, and because they know if America becomes non-white, then everything is going to change. And they already see what's happening now.
Right. Now, Time Magazine said that way back in 1989, as others have said it for years. But Time Magazine, the reason I point that out, because that is considered a magazine that everybody read, very popular magazine, 1989, established media. And they said 1989 in a major article, frontline article, front page article, that everything will change. Our culture, our morals, our identity, our values, our work ethics, everything would change. And it is happening.
Well, and right, and because that's happening, everything is changing. And you can see the same thing that's happening in Europe. Just the devastation in Europe is just enormous. With all these thousands and thousands of, again, so-called refugees that they're flooding into these countries because they want to change the population.
And there's a growing reaction to it all over Europe.
And what's sad is, you know, when they, absolutely, it's definitely, there's a huge reaction. I don't care if it's in France, in Germany, in Sweden, in Finland, all of these countries, there are big reactions. But what's really shameful and sad is that we see what's the travesty that's happening with our white brothers and sisters over there. In Finland now. Finland, I believe, I was reading yesterday that Finland's rape population, or not rape population, the statistical on rape, the women, the Finnish women, the white women over there, rape has increased so much that now it's the highest number of the rape population is in Finland, in as far as Europe, because you have these non-whites moving in there, and I mean literally, they're just raping the white women over there. I mean, they're literally, and so
they want to impregnate them,
yeah,
with non-white babies,
yeah. I mean, it's an actual invasion, and now you have white women in Finland that are not safe. And statistically, if you go to Finland, you have a higher percentage of being raped there than any other country. And Sweden is the outrageous in Sweden and Germany. I mean, all our countries, white sister countries, the women there are literally not safe because you have these non-whites, their morals are totally different. They look as white women as basically the prize, and if you can rape them, then you're causing degeneration into their people. And when they rape as a crowd. It's not like you have one or two people. I mean, they literally will have 20, 30, 40 people that will surround a one or two white girl and literally just rape them.
Yeah. They're not sneaking into somebody's bedroom in the middle of the night.
No.
A girl will be walking down a mall.
Yeah.
You know, middle of daylight, thinking she's totally safe. And all of a sudden, she can be surrounded by 15 or 20 of these Arabs.
Yeah.
And she becomes a victim right there in broad daylight.
And they surround them, and so yeah. Because then no one can see what's going on. And you got massive of them on top of her raping her. Yeah. I mean, it's outrageous. You know, and that's why there's such a backlash that's happening. And like we've always said, Dad, you know, you've always said, when it gets to the point where white people goes berserk,
yeah,
it's like that inner instinct in them, they will not take anymore, and they go berserk.
Yeah.
And that's what you're starting to see in Europe. I mean, you're now starting seeing politicians saying, if we need where refugees are coming in, they're shot at the border. Yeah. We need to start expelling them. I mean, literally, they see this
invasion.
There was
one country, and you may recall, one country where they actually began to expelling some of the Arabs, refugees.
Right.
And use that term very loosely. And rape crime has actually started to decline now.
Yeah.
And I forget what country that was. But at least in this country still, a lot of our women are packing. It's not going to be so easy to rape some woman in this country as over in Europe, because they've got those people totally disarmed.
Right.
You know. And they can't. You get a special permit and go through a background check and a process taking 20 years to go through, and then you can maybe own a gun for museum purposes. But in this country, people are carrying guns, and it'd be a lot harder to find a girl in a mall and rape her in this country as it would be in Europe, because these gals here are packing.
Well, in England, they've been having a move for quite a while. But it's getting more and more where they're trying to disarm people from having knives.
Certain
the size of knives, carrying knives and stuff like that. So they don't want people to have knives at all.
No knives save lives. Right. I think the slogan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Knives save lives.
Yeah. And in London now, you know, you have the first elected Muslim in London, which is basically Muslims, or London is just a non-white city.
And now he's threatening the United States. He said, if we try to follow through with Trump's policies if he gets elected, that America may not be safe from terrorist attacks.
Right.
You know, they have like a mobster come up to your little bakery and said, you know, this is a bad neighborhood. You know, you need maybe some protection. We can't guarantee how safe you'll be.
If
we can't guarantee. Yeah. We don't know, but it may be bad for you.
Right.
It's a threat. It's a threat coming from this Muslim mayor of London.
Right.
Is there any white people left in London? What do they think about this? What does the Queen think about that? I don't know.
Oh, you know the Queen.
She don't care.
Well, she probably doesn't care, but she can see the difference. No, they know the difference. They see the difference, but they're not going to say anything.
They're afraid.
They're not going to do anything.
They've allowed the parasite to become so strong in our countries that look at all these protests in this country. I was to safely say that the vast majority of the Mexicans that are protesting against Trump, as an example, in this country, are not even legal residents.
Right.
They're illegal. Shouldn't even be here.
Right.
And yet they're trying to dictate to us what our policy should be.
Absolutely.
And they've allowed so many into the country, they've become a real threat and a voice and a political power, even though they have no political power. They, by their sheer volumes and their sheer magnitude of protest, they become a political force. So, but like I said, the girls in the country are carrying guns, and they're going to protect themselves, hopefully. And more women are carrying guns, and more states are opening the doors for gun permits now.
Well, it really needs to happen because, you know, it's getting dangerous. I mean, any major city in the United States is basically a non-white country. Every major city. I don't name one.
I can't name any.
Yeah.
Major city belongs to the third world.
Yeah. It's a third world country. It's a non-white country. And you're really not safe. It has a resemblance of what the city used to look like and reflect. Yeah. But in reality, it's governed by non-whites. It's governed, the mayors, the police.
They're all bankrupt.
Yeah. They're all bankrupt. I mean, not safe. White people basically don't live there. Yeah, you have segments of, you know, the cities where white people live at. But for the vast majority, it's not run by whites. And so, it's very insane.
You've got the city, the major city that are non-white, and you get it surrounded by the suburbs, which are the white people.
Right.
You know, but the inner city is where the crime occurs at. That's where all the police shootings occurring at. That's where all the school violence is occurring at. And it makes me kind of mad when I see reports on TV. They talk about crime in the inner cities, you know, but they never want to point out the demographics of that crime.
Exactly.
They just say in the inner city. Well, we know what the inner city is.
It's a code word.
Yeah. Inner city is a code word for non-white. But how many people put that together? I don't know. I'm sure a lot do.
Well, and the thing is, there was a thing, I got the very last of it was on ABC News yesterday, where statistically, there's been a high rise of police shooters, shooting, where people are actually shooting the police, which is, you're non-whites, you know, they're basically shooting the police, and so...
They are shooting non-white police, too,
right,
because the non-white police... You know, appear to be betrayers.
Yeah,
you're part of the white power structure.
Right. So it doesn't matter if you're a black police officer, Asian, Mexican. Doesn't matter. You're still considered the white establishment. And so, but they were saying that, you know, there's been a drastic increase of people. They don't say who shooting police. You know. And as a result, you're having more and more police officers not getting out of their cars. They're staying in their cars. They drive around. They avoid certain neighborhoods. You know? And as a result of that, there has been
increase in crime.
But what's funny is there was a question about that with a spokesman at the White House, you know, and you know, the spokesman there was saying, Well, there's been no data showing that it's because, you know, of the, you know, the Black Lives Matter movements or anything that's showing that that's the cause of the increase of the police shootings, you know. So they're, of course, they know that is. They know that because of, this attack on the white establishment, the attack on the cops, it's all because you have this sense of urgency by the non-whites. They, in their mind, they know they have the white man on the run, and so they're just moving forward very quickly. And part of that agenda is cause fear in the white establishment, cause fear with the cops, and cops are the enemy. And so if you see, they see a cop, they're going to shoot them. But, you know, you have the White House saying, oh, that, there's nothing showing that there's a comparison because the increase of people shooting police is because of the fact that there's all these protests and stuff like that. So it's just one of these things that, that ultimately, our people, you know, they got to be smart out there. They got to be very careful where they go, and what time of the day they go. If you have a firearm, you need to be carrying your firearm. You just it's a war out there. I mean, it literally is. And when you have your family with you, you need to be packing. And you definitely have your family. You need to watch where you go. You know, don't get sucked up thinking, oh, I'm going to go inside the city and go to this event or whatever and act like nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
You're a white person. You're the enemy. Yeah. That's how they look at it.
When you're traveling on a trip and you enter a large city, get gas before you get to the city.
Yeah.
Get gas in one of the smaller towns outside of the city and then wait till you get up and, or go down, make sure you got enough to get to the other side of the city before you need gas. And while I say that's true, excuse me, that's not necessarily true in the South.
Right.
Because there are a lot of small black towns in the South that are almost all black. So in the South you have, in the North you got the minority in your major cities. In the South you got minority in your major cities, but you have a lot of small towns that are all black too. So if you're if you're from the North or from the West, you're going to the South, then you have to you had to look at it a little bit differently. You can't just say, well, I'm coming to Memphis, so I'll stop and get gas at Jackson, Tennessee. You know, because Jackson, Tennessee is heavily populated with the black.
Right.
So you got to be very, very careful in those areas, too. You don't want to be paranoid, but then again, paranoid people live longer. So, you know, so you have to be careful, and don't wander about the car, leave your family unattended, don't leave your car keys in your car, run to the store real quick, leave your wife in the car.
Make sure it's locked.
Yeah. You just got to be careful. And, you know, not that we want people to be afraid, but they need to be a little bit of fear because it's not safe out there anymore. There's a hatred, intense hatred against white people. And it's coming from all your minorities. And I'm
minorities, non-whites.
Non-whites.
They're not minorities anymore.
They're not minorities anymore. And we're not saying every non-white is that way. We're not saying that. But the point is there are a higher percentage of them. There's enough. I've never been bit by a rattlesnake. Have you?
I have not.
But you're known to stay away from rattlesnakes.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I know to stay away from them. And I've never been bitten by a shark. But I'm not going to dive into waters where there's sharks. And I see sometimes, like out Yellowstone, there'll sometimes be like a bear sightings. They'll say there's been some bear sightings in a certain area. They advise hikers stay away from that area and so forth because so on. What's the same thing? More people are killed, raped, mutilated, robbed, mugged than by blacks every single day than happens by grizzly bears in Yellow Forest, Yellowstone. So maybe there should be on the radio, there's been a Negro sighting. You know, I don't know. And because it is very dangerous. And I know you turn on TV and you see nice black people on TV. You might have black college professors. I know there's a lot of nice black people out there. We're not saying every black person is a mugger or a rapist or anything. We're not saying that.
Well, you got to look at them as a whole. You can't look at it as an individual. You have to look at it as a whole.
And there's enough of them that are prone to that, that you have to be careful.
Well, you know, the thing is, I mean, when we go on vacation, you're driving, and if I'm going to stop at a gas station, I kind of do a little bit like a scan and drive-by.
Uh-huh.
I kind of slow down. I'm scanning, let's say, the gas station. Well, obviously, you're scanning the neighborhood, but yeah. I'll scan the gas station. Then I'll start thinking, do I see whites?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it's like just all blacks,
yeah.
And I don't like, and you kind of see, you know, if it's like all blacks, I don't stop.
Yeah.
I just don't stop. I'll go where there, I see whites, if I see whites getting out like that, because yeah. then I know that's probably going to be a little bit more safer yeah. statistically
right.
than if it's just all blacks.
Because you don't have to do anything. You may drive up there, just get your gas, and some black guy, well, why are you looking at me like that for?
Yeah.
How come you're staring me down?
Or, I want some money, you know, yeah. but I don't have any money. Well, you racist?
Yeah.
You know, because I'm black, yeah. you know, and then you got all their buddies. So, you know.
Yeah.
You know, so it's one of those things that you got to be careful out there. You really is. I mean, we're in a whole new world where white people are hated, and they are hated big time. These non-whites, they hate the white people with a passion to the point that they want you dead, and so that's why people got to be careful. They need to be living in areas where they're white. White population, because you got to look at what your children, where they're going to be raised at. And so it's very, very important that you start thinking race. Start thinking from everything that should be focused on race.
Yeah.
And people don't, for whatever reason, they don't do that because they still want to put blinders on.
They focus on money.
Yeah, they focus on money.
How much money they make, their job. I build my fence a little bit higher. You know, I've only got 8 years to retirement. I can't give up my retirement, but you might sacrifice the future of your children as a result.
But then people also put the blinders on because they think, well, if I think of just race, then they automatically think, oh, I'm a racist, I'm a hater, and then people don't want to be that.
Yeah.
You know? And they really truly want to try to get along with everybody. So they want to put those blinders on. Unfortunately, those blinders, you're not going to be able to see the black person or the Mexican coming up behind you, beside you.
Yeah.
You know? Going to start hitting you or trying to rape your wife or whatever the thing is. So you better take those blinders off and start understand that we're in a new world. Your skin is your color. And it's like
uniform.
Your uniform. And right. So kind of like if you're a black person that has their colors and the blood and the Crips, when you're a white person, that's your color. That's your uniform. And when they see a white
person, you may not think about it that way, but they are.
They absolutely do. And so when they see that, they're looking at you are the enemy. You're the one that has caused all their misfortunes in life. You know? And so they hate you. They hate your children. And
they'll be, if it wasn't for white people, they'll be living in prosperity, like all the nations of Africa.
Absolutely. It would just be a glorious day.
Yeah, like all the countries of Africa.
Yeah, yeah. And they wouldn't have, you know, 8 kids with, you know, 8 different daddies. You know, they would be able to
have... It's all your fault.
Yeah, a unified family. And they would live in prosperity. And they, you know, they would... All their history of ill will is all because of the white man.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and realistically, that's what they think. You may people go, oh, you're just really, you really are a racist. That's reality. And so, you know, if you are actually having a blinder on and you can start seeing what's happening out there, that is what's going to happen even more when the white population is the minority, and we're statistically almost to that point culturally, like that, like you've always said. Culturally, we're already at that point. We're already a minority. The white traditional America is already a minority. And so people need to start thinking of themselves as a race. They need to start getting behind organizations, the Knights Party. They start needing to attend events. They need to start bringing their children to events and conferences. They need to have them start reading newspapers. They need to get educated. They need really get in a safe zone, a no zombie zone. You know, I think that's, you know, start advertising that we're a no zombie zone.
No zombie zone.
You know, and so, you know, people out there really need to pay really particular attention.
Well, they need to move out. Some people may really need to consider where they're living at and begin the process of making a move. And not necessarily always easy to do, but it can be done. So they need to seriously look at the possibility of beginning making that move, especially if you have children, and especially if you have children that are in their mid-teens or within a couple of years be looking at marriage prospects. You need to move before they get anchored down with a spouse in the city you're escaping from. And so these are serious times we're living in. It's not a lark. It's a serious time, just as I'm sure advice was being given to all those wagon trains heading out west, heading to Indian Territory. I'm quite sure there's all kinds of advice given to those families about how to react and what to do and how to prepare yourself, how to protect yourself from roaming Indians or from the drought or just whatever. So this is just sound advice for people to stop and consider. This is a serious time we're living in. And you got a family you love, a family you want to protect, and you need to stop and begin analyzing the situation, analyzing where you live at, the job you have, the neighborhoods you live in, the schools your children are going to, and then not just analyze what you have, what they are now, analyze the trends that are occurring, what's happening, how is this neighborhood going to change over the next 5 years or 10 years. The schools, how are they going to change over the next 5 to 10 years? Look at the trends, see how things are changing, and then begin making the process to making a move. Just like the old pioneers did in the old days, you have to make a move into new territory for the protection of your family and their future. And so these are the things to consider. Everybody don't have the same situation. Everybody don't have the same challenges. People live in different areas, different families with different ages and so on. So we can't give it just a one-size-fit-all suggestions. But you need to begin a process of moving away from the infested area into an area where your children can prosper. And that's the most important thing. And some people say, well, it's hard on me. It could be hard on my wife to make the move, or hard on my wife, or whatever the case may be. But you got to understand, it's not about you, it's about your kids. It's not about you. So often, sometimes we have people come to conferences, and they maybe bring their family, but they've got to leave early, they've got to be at work Monday morning. Well, this isn't about you, this is about your kids. You know, drive all night you have to. I did it when I was, when your kids were younger. After coming to a conference, go to a meeting, get your families around good, white, wholesome families. You need to really work on it, because this is about the future of your children, what kind of home nation they're going to have 5, 10, 15 years down the road. You need to be wise about these things and begin researching to these things.
Well, that is so true. I mean, it really saddens me when you have, white parents, that are good people, and they really don't understand the importance of conveying that to their children. They just assume their children are going to grow up having those same beliefs. But if the children don't see mom and dad being involved, showing a concern about the struggle, about what's happening around them, kids are not going to grow up thinking the same.
Yeah,
it's just not going to happen.
It can't be just mom and dad telling the kids, this is the problem, this is it, this is it. The children have become involved. You need to involve them into the struggle at whatever age they are, to whatever limits they can at their particular ages. You need to be involved yourself. You need to contribute. We're not being financed by any large corporations. You need to get behind this movement and help finance it. Send your tithe to this efforts of white Christian revival. Let your children know that's what you're doing, that they'll help write out the check, let them put it in the envelope, put a stamp on the envelope, lick the envelope, whatever the case may be. Get to conferences, have them sit down and listen, have your children sit down and listen to the radio with you. Not like it's a chore, but something you enjoy doing. If you show that you're having fun, they'll have fun doing it. And so you need to involve them every single day of the week. And then the reason conferences are so important, because we all have one coming up here in September now, the reason these are so important is because kids have got to see that it's more than just mom and dad. that there are other people who care about these efforts and have these concerns also. So everybody has to be involved. Everybody has to be work for White Christian Revival.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, and you did talk about the conference in September. That's actually Labor Day weekend. That's the Knights Party Congress. And Knights Party Congress all starts on Friday evening, usually around 6 o'clock. It's all day Saturday, all day Sunday. Sunday evening, we have our traditional cross lighting. A great time to bring your family. We have an ice cream social on Saturday evening. A lot of good families. It's a place you can go and have a family retreat. This family retreat here at the Christian Revival Center and the Soldiers of the Cross Bible Camp, it's always focused on family. So bring your children, bring your spouses. If you're a grandparent, bring your grandkids. And they're going to have fun. There's camping places that on the campground. You can pitch your tent. If you have an RV, you can bring your RV. There's no water hookups to the RV, but you know, we have had people in the past bring their RVs. There's cabins you can stay at, family cabins, for a nominal fee, usually about $10 a night, if you want to stay there. So it really is a family retreat. A lot of great music, great speakers, children's program. It's something that you're really not going to want to miss. And when you leave, you really are energized. You start networking with people. You start realizing there are people across the United States that have the same concern for you, the same passion and desire to awaken your fellow brothers and sisters. And you start having hope again. So often it's just everything's negative, 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 and we got to realize that hope is not lost, that we are going to be victorious. We have to have a mission to awaken our people, and it's going to be hard. There's no question about it. It's going to be hard. There is a struggle, but the struggle, it really is not a struggle because your children are worth it. Your children are worth it. We got interrupted by the phone. But anyway, I was just saying that really it's not a struggle anymore because your family, your children are worth it. And to me, it's hard work. But what is more important, the inconvenience or preserving a future for your children? And so it's very important. Attend the Knights Party Congress. You're not going to want to miss it. You can go to the website, kkk.com. And read more information about it, or you can call the office at 870-427-3414, and you want to get more information about the Knights Party Congress. But it's a great time. You're not going to want to miss it. And these are exciting times to see our people starting to awaken of what's happening around them. And so that, to me, that is an exciting time.
Absolutely. Well, Jason, we have this about wrapped up. Next week, maybe we'll have some other on the show with us. It won't be just you and I rattling.
Yep.
But until next time, we always advise people, love your God and love your people.